Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a podcast born out of the shock and surprise that according to a report published earlier this year, that only 11% of women currently hold the title of creative director within the media industry. As an artist and creative director myself, I'm not oblivious to the inequality, which, let's face it, is rife in most industries, and spurred on by the 2018 Create Your Futures event, which challenged those attending what they would do to address the imbalance, the concept for Greater Than 11% was born. The ultimate aim is to contribute to significantly increasing that very small percentage. Having reflected for some time over the potential reasons as to why, across the board, there is such a disproportionate number of women to men in creative roles, I arrived at the fact there is a lot of careers that I have absolutely no idea what they are or actually what skills they require. So the possibility to inhabit or aspire to have those roles can never eventuate. I should also say here, there is of course many other factors that contribute to inequality, misogyny being quite a significant one. As I'm super interested in how others shape their creativity, I'll be chatting to a range of women over the series, exploring their careers and their creative lives, in the aim to expand the knowledge of the vast number of options available for pursuing a creative career, in addition to shedding some light on what others do. Today I'm joined by Laura Francis, Senior Editor at Content Agency Hub, based in London, where we both work together. Laura's worked for a range of broadcasters, Discovery, ITV and Sky to name a few, and has worked on some juicy documentaries such as The Race of Their Lives and The Magic of the Big Blue. She has an innate sense for storytelling, both narratively and pictorially, and when crafting an edit has the ability to reveal the hidden, that empathetic moment that hits you in the gut, makes your heart swell and your lip quiver. I think it is more than fair to say, and which I'm sure she will agree, she is extremely chilled and is unflappable in the most stressful of situations, which often arise in the edit suite, as a result of not having all the shots that are needed, technical failures, and last-minute changes by clients, the producer, or the creative director. She also has an extremely dry sense of humour. She brightens the dark space of an edit suite with her fantastic style and is a delight to collaborate with on a regular basis. Laura, welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you. Awesome intro.
All true.
I mean, I'm just going to take you everywhere with me. It's my hype squad.
Happy to do it. And I'm going to embellish it more and more every time. Obviously with truthful things. All right. So to kick off, I'm going to go back to my kind of initial beginnings in the media industry. I was already, in fact, a grown up, having gone to university later and graduating at 30. And my first job was an edit assistant. And I was completely rubbish. I had to work like extremely hard to get to a decent standard of just the basics, and I wasn't even sure if I wanted to be an editor, and realized pretty quickly that actually producing was better suited to my skills. I'd say it's invaluable now that I did it. It helps with ideation and also putting it together when you're on a shoot, but I'm absolutely in awe and admiration for editors. For me, they are somewhat the unsung hero of many productions across all genres, film, TV, branded content and documentary. Editors find those moments that can sucker punch a viewer, that is off script, they can reshape a narrative and add a whole new element to the original concept. So I'm curious as to firstly, how did you arrive at wanting to be an editor, and then what was that journey?
So yeah, I don't know if I actually understood what being an editor was when I was at school or anything, but I just loved TV, I loved watching it, and I loved I'd always notice things about TV as well. It was like weird things, like watching EastEnders and like the ketchup bottle would be on the wrong side of the table in the next shot or something. Yeah. I'd always just like notice really random things and just completely annoy my family all the time. Just wondering how things were done, like how they managed to do those effects or what was happening. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how, and I just wanted to know why.
Yeah.
So I've always got that kind of curiosity. So after school, I went to do a higher learning course for AES levels. I did business because, I don't know, maybe the pressures of being like a young black girl in my community, like maybe it's... It was kind of like having a creative job was just kind of unheard of and a bit random. So, you had to be a professional. You had to be a lawyer or a doctor or something that earned some bloody money because, you know, your family's kind of sacrificed so much for you to be able to have this education and have the freedom to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so I did business and I quickly realised that I hated it. Like, I hated it massively, like, really badly. And so the next semester I changed and did media. And part of my course was the editing. There was nothing that I loved more than just kind of piecing it all together and having that ability to kind of make something out of not very much was really satisfying. So after I finished that course, I did a kind of extra foundation course on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
I decided not to go to university. But I didn't really know where to start, really, because it's just not really something that anyone that I knew had ever done.
Mm.
I Googled it, researched it, and just ended up sending my non-CV, my CV of nothingness, to like 100 people or so, loads of different post-production companies in and around Soho, and just trawled the streets of Soho as well, like at literally going into companies and handing in my CV and stuff, and got like about 10 responses or 5 or 10 responses, I can't remember, but not many that were just positive. Yeah. Most of them were like rejections. And then ended up, I got one call from a very small company in Soho, DGP, which was my first ever runner's job.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually remember I went to that interview in a suit. Like,
just... So you couldn't let your business ambitions go.
I don't know why. I'm in a suit.
I'm going to show them that this runner means business.
I mean business. That just shows my naivety. Like, I didn't know anything about industry in terms of how relaxed it was, or that you could just go in a pair of jeans and a t-shirt. But yeah, so I went in a suit and I got that job.
Do you think it was because of the suit?
Yeah, suit sold it.
Clinched it.
And I stayed there for about 6 months, only a short time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really nice just to kind of understand it. But I think I had to change my personality a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's strange to go into a working environment where you're isolated in your culture as well.
Yeah.
So your peers are completely different to the people that you work with.
Yeah.
And maybe changing my personality in order to fit that was a bit difficult at first. I think I kind of came across as a little bit, probably aggressive, a bit standoffish, just because I'm open as a person. And I didn't realise that not everyone is open.
Mm.
So maybe that was it, really.
How old were you when you got your first job?
I was 17, almost 18.
Yeah, so you're still really young and you're still figuring out who you are and you've gone out from school to out into the world.
Yeah.
And this notion where you start thinking about, if I'm going to fit in here or being able to continue with this, I need to change my personality. And then what does that mean to you now, looking back?
I think it wasn't really a change of personality now that I can see myself.
Uh-huh.
I think it was more like just toning it down a little bit. Maybe, I think you just have to have a different approach. Everyone's different.
Yeah.
Okay, so recognising people's differences and changing the way that you interact with that person.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily your personality, but accommodating their kind of little idiosyncrasies. Because growing up in a black community, and I went to a school that was majority black as well, so it wasn't like I had a huge amount of different races of friends. And then to be in an environment that's completely white was like a real culture shock for me. It was like, well, okay, so I can't speak to you in the same way that I would with my peers because we're culturally different.
Yeah.
And so then in order for me to get my point across without coming across like a really aggressive, angry person, I have to change.
It's so funny, our first experiences at work, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love that. As at that age for me as well, I really thought I knew pretty much everything. And as I get older, I realise I know nothing.
I think, I remember actually at my first job, I remember saying, I didn't know he was like the CEO of the company at the time, but I was in the kitchen making breakfast for the clients and I was just like, oh God, you are really in the way. Do you think you could just do something to go somewhere? Because you're just ruining my space here and it's really getting on my nerves. And so then he was like, oh, right, okay, well, I'll just leave then. And he went out, and then one of the other runners said to me, like, you know who that is, don't you? And I'm like, nope, don't care, he's in the way. And then he was like, yeah, CEO? Oh, okay, crap.
Well, you didn't lose your job, so.
Yeah, I didn't lose my job, but I could have. Yeah. So, yeah, I learned pretty quickly to be more aware of my surroundings and the people as well. Yeah. But I just got the bug, and I was like, I definitely want to do this. And so moved around a lot of different post-production houses in Soho and just kind of built up my skills, learning, speaking to other editors, loads of different types of production roles, mm-hmm. just trying to, you know, understand everything I could about it. And I ended up in a company called St. Anne's Post, which mm-hmm. was co-owned by Asset Media at the time, and they did a lot of different productions for all of the UK TV programs, mm-hmm. like loads of different channels. So there I could kind of, I was still a runner, but I could still, you know, interact with clients, mm-hmm. meet people, talk to other editors. And after being there for about a year, then I started to move into the machine room,
mm-hmm.
which is like the technical area that kind of looks after all of the client's needs in terms of looking after footage and doing tape transfers, making sure there's all like regulation checks, legalising, things like that. So all of the behind the scenes legwork mm-hmm. for making a TV programme. And that was really cool for kind of building up my technical skills and understanding the terminology and jargon for all of the things that you need to be an editor, mm-hmm. because it's not just about what you can visually create. And so I did that for about another year, and then I left to go and join Discovery. So I joined Discovery, which actually was run by Asset Media at the time, mm-hmm. so they run their playout centre, so all of their broadcasting. And so when I went to Discovery, there wasn't actually an edit department.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined as an ingest operator, which was a cool job because I got to watch programming that was already made, do stuff like QC checking, legalization, which was another side of technical skills that I needed to kind of add as well for editing, which was really, really useful.
Mm-hmm. And that's checking everything before it goes live to broadcast. Exactly. To make sure, you know, you said, QC, so quality control, making sure that kind of all the luminance balances are correct for broadcast, that they're not too bright, too dark, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so learning all of those trade kind of tricks that you need to know, because everything is regulated. Mm-hmm. So you need to stay within those limits. And I did that for 3 years. And then Discovery decided to build an edit facility. So at 23, I became an editor,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of amazing and unheard of for, you know, people that young aren't normally editors.
Yeah.
So it was already a great achievement for me.
It's awesome. That's amazing. And hard work. You got there with hard work.
Yeah. Yeah. Very hard work and a really long slog.
Mm.
But it was worth it in the end, you know.
Maybe we can look at, so for me, like, an editor takes many shapes and forms. And I say that because that role covers a load of different industries. You know, we've got kind of broadcast, we've got filmmaking, we've got branded content and kind of corporate. And I'm wondering, for you and your current role, what does a typical day look like?
So for me, a typical day is... Well, depending if it's a new job. If it's a new job, then I'll go and speak with the producer, or the producer will come and speak to me, and then we'll discuss the client, the project itself, what the producer's hoping to achieve
mm-hmm.
by their brief or what's been shot, and then we'll try and come up with an idea. What I normally do is I'll look for the footage, try and get a feel through it,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe if I have to pick some music or some sound effects or something, then I'll I'll start to kind of source those. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go through the footage and build the basic structure mm-hmm. of what I believe their idea to be and how I've interpreted that. And then normally I'd go back to them at that point and say, like, this is what I'm starting with. Am I on the right track? Mm-hmm. Or if I really feel like that's the right way, I'll finish it to the point where I feel like it's good enough to show someone.
Yep.
And then I'll go back to them again and we'll keep working until it's done.
Okay. And what is the roles that support you? What's the, like, if you have a team, how do they work?
So the fundamentals are the producers and my edit assistant or tech ops. Those are the people. I mean, I'd like to say cameramen, but I never really interact with them very much. Mm. And I'm normally cursing them quite a lot for what they've sent me. But in the day-to-day, it's the producers and my edit assistants. Uh-huh. Because without them, I don't have a reason to be making something.
Uh-huh.
So the producers are kind of fundamental in the sense of that they bring me their concept and then I'm given the task of making something, a realization of their concept.
Mm-hmm.
So they are really fundamental in the creative process for me mm-hmm. in the first place. And then obviously my other assistant's going to be supporting me in terms of footage and making sure that everything's there
yep.
and everything's in the right place. And then I can keep that organized structure without sacrificing my creative time.
Mm-hmm. What would you say are the attributes needed by an editor and how that differs between each genre type that we talked about earlier on? So, like, a difference between creating a documentary and perhaps to a drama.
Well, I don't know if there are that many differences. Mm-hmm. Like, people always ask me about, like, what's your style of editing? And I don't believe that an editor should have a style.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because you have to be flexible depending on what you're working on because your approach changes for everything.
Yeah.
But I think there are fundamental attributes that you need, which are patience and humility.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to be patient because you're never, ever going to get anything to be perfect at all. And it's never, ever going to come in. Like, the footage is never going to be exactly what you need. You're never actually going to have the exact cut that you need or the right angle or even the right colour balance. Like, it's impossible sometimes to have...
Except when we work together.
I mean, yeah, obviously. Because you've got it down.
Yeah. Perfect. It comes in, you're like, this is the best footage ever.
So you have to have patience. And also because sometimes someone is going to want to change something. And you're going to have to change it maybe a million times.
Yeah.
And you might watch it 100 times in one day, but you've still got to look at it like it's fresh.
Yeah.
So having that kind of patience is kind of imperative. And I say humility because you can't be too precious about things.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you've got to have... I'm proud of everything I do, and if I'm not proud, I will walk away.
Yeah.
I don't want to make stuff that I'm not proud of.
Yeah.
But I think you have to be flexible in order to change something, even if you don't actually know why someone wants to change it.
Yeah.
Because not every time that you're in an edit do you understand every point of what that producer has to produce and where it's going to end up and why they're doing a certain thing. They might ask you to do something and you don't really understand why, because narratively you might think, I'm not sure that works, or I would rather not use that shot. But there's always a reason, because perhaps maybe there's, like, compliance issues
yeah.
or some other stuff. And if you spend all that time battling for the tiniest thing, then you lose everything.
Yeah.
You waste all your creativeness from just arguing about stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're humble about stuff and you can take on board other people's suggestions,
yeah.
you can also end up with something awesome.
I think as well, that's what I learned, especially with editing, and I learned that anyway, working especially with clients, is you can't be emotionally attached. No. You've got to try and protect the work creatively, but you can't get emotionally heartbroken if something has to go which you really feel strongly about.
Yeah, exactly.
So what would you say is the best thing about editing? Because this is a job that you wanted, even though you didn't really know what it was. You found out what it was. You worked so hard. You applied yourself. You got to where you wanted to be. So and you still love doing it. So what's the best thing about it?
For me, like, the coolest thing about being an editor is that I get to see exactly what I've done every single day. I get to have achieved something every single day. And also that it's a really quick process. So I don't have to spend so much time to reap the rewards of my hard work. I see it. So I can go to work one day, make a program, and it'll be on the TV the next day. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
And maybe not everyone knows that I did that, but when I see it on TV, I'll know that I did it. And that's awesome.
I'm wondering if you can tell me about storytelling through editing. Because it's different to writing a story or to shooting a story, or, you know, editing is, yeah, you have all these pieces.
Yeah.
And you have a line maybe from the director or from the producer. Or,
yeah.
But then you still have to put the narrative and the pictures together and make it obviously interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, documentary editing is difficult in the sense that it has to be linear in order to tell a story. So you kind of you're bound by that a little bit. So if you're following a character, for example, there has to be considerable amount of continuity within that. You can't just always chop and change or take him from, I don't know, being in a house to suddenly being in his car, or you have to explain that and you have to let the images explain it.
Yeah, I think, though, especially with editing for me, and when I watch others do it, and, you know, you're exceptional in it, especially in the kind of documentary style for kind of the work we've done together, is that you're telling a story through the voice narrative or the voiceover or whatever it is that's actually verbally telling the story. But then you're also telling another story with the pictures. And obviously the pictures can change what's being verbally said. So you've almost got three or four strands of stories at any one point going on.
Yeah.
And then you have to weave all that together into kind of this master narrative and story that is the pictures are complementing the kind of, you know, verbal narrative, the voiced narrative.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how you work with that, separating that, because it's a lot of information and you have to look at a lot of footage and then you have to put it all together in your mind and then you have to go back to that footage and you might see something else that you know, you either missed or you forgot about. So it's quite a lot of mental kind of strength that goes on when editing.
So what I normally do is I build it once and I'd watch it and then I'd leave it and I'd go away from, I don't know, an hour or so and come back and watch it again and see if I have the same feeling or if I understand that there's another feeling that could be interpreted from it. I think it's always just about remoulding it and changing it again and almost like a Rubik's, just kind of twisting it around and seeing what kind of result you get until it all fits.
Because I think it's a real ability in your mind's eye as well to take all the things that you've seen and keep twisting it around like a Rubik's, because it's in your mind you're doing that. It's not necessarily on the sequence, on the timeline that you're editing with.
Yeah, I think, like, that's what I've always said about editing. It's a really intense puzzle. It's an enigma. And you're just kind of shifting it around all the time in your mind, how you can create loads of different outcomes and you just kind of have to decide which outcome is the best one and work through that. And it might not even work in the end, but you've got to give it a go anyway and just keep doing it until you come out with something that's really cool.
I always think with editing, and I still edit, but mainly on kind of my own kind of productions, but I always think when I kind of get to the point where I'm like, okay, that's it, I think of all the millions of other variations that could have been told or shown or, you know, put out there in the world. And I think that's what's amazing with editing. Yes, you can shoot things in various different ways, but an edit is like a jigsaw that can be fitted together in, like, all these permutations. It's not one thing. And I think that is the magic of the edit. That's why I'm so in awe of editors, because I do think it's like all the things are thrown up in the air and they're kind of grabbing things and laying it down. So what would you say has been one of the biggest challenges in your career?
I guess because I started so young, convincing people that I know what I'm talking about is probably the most difficult thing. I remember being, like, when I first started, sitting in my edit suite, setting up, was waiting for my client, and he came in, and then he just kind of sat down next to me, opened his laptop, was just like fiddling around, doing his emails. And I was like, so do you wanna get started? And he was like, yeah, but I was waiting for the editor to come. And I was like, oh, me, it's me. Hiya. but then he was like, really, it's you? And I was like, yeah, it's really me. Like, this is what you got. Are we going
to
start?
This is where you should pull out what you did to the CEO and go, you're in my space right now. I think you need to get out of my way.
So I think, like, just every time someone new would come in, it's that time of having to prove yourself. You spend the first hour trying to convince them that you know what you're doing. And I think that became... I think that's a bit... That's quite taxing in the beginning. Mm. But I think once I understood that's what I have to do,
yeah,
it was kind of okay. I was just like, okay, well, today I'll just convince you again.
Yeah.
Because I can.
Which must be great, because that, you know, you've got the goods to back it up. So it's like, okay, well, you can doubt me. Watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you find inspiration and how do you incorporate it into what you do?
I love to watch what other people are doing, like other programs, TV programs, documentaries, films, and to incorporate that in work. I don't really know if I'm stealing other people's kind of creativity and taking it into my own. Maybe if I really thought about it, I probably am doing that. But it's this kind of subconscious thing.
Don't you think it is, like, we all do that anyway? We see things and we're like, oh, I'd like to try that. But we always have our take on it.
I just like to take ownership for my own stuff. Yeah. So especially if I collaborate with someone on something, then I'll never say it's mine.
Yeah.
It's always ours.
Yes.
So I think, yeah, I just, maybe it's just life in general, mm-hmm. I think.
What advice would you give someone wanting to be an editor?
For me, it was really good to kind of understand the department that I wanted to be in. So if you can figure out that, as soon as you can figure that out, that's the best option. Mm. If you can make that decision really quickly, that would be the best way forward, because it's a really long road to get there. So if you have to change course at any point, you know, you're going to run into some problems. And I'm not saying that you won't get there, but it'll just be harder.
Yep.
And talk to people. Because I think, like a lot of editors, we love to share knowledge and we're so cool with helping each other out. It's like there's no dumb questions.
Yep.
So if you have a chance to like speak to an editor, or even like the forums that are online, there's loads of them, just to ask questions, you can. And there will always be someone to give you advice about it. There are avenues always.
I never knew about the forums.
There's loads.
That would have helped me out.
There are loads online. They've saved my bacon all the time. Like if Google doesn't know the answer, the forum will.
Can you let me know what's coming up for you in terms of kind of editing or creativity? Or
I'm loving my time at Hub. So I'm loving all of the stuff that we get to work on. And I'm hoping that we get the opportunity to do some more long form, because I'm kind of missing it a bit. It'd be quite nice to do like another documentary or something similar in that vein.
Yeah.
Yeah, just long form in general. But for me, it's always editing. I'm not giving it up.
Yeah.
Not for anything. So.
All right. Well, sadly, we're coming to the end. It's always sad when I get to the end, because it's like you just start chatting and getting into the vibe and you're like, oh, out of time. But I think, you know, we discussed this earlier, and at the end of each episode, I ask each guest to firstly tell me about a role or a job that they're interested in that they kind of don't know very much about and they'd like to know more about, so I can see if I can find someone who can come on Greater Than 11%, we can have a chat to them, but also a woman they'd love to hear on the podcast, and yeah, what are your thoughts?
Okay, so I think a role that's always really interested me is screenwriting, simply because I'm so visual. Like, everything I do is based around the way something looks. And even when I have to write scripts now, it's always helpful for me to already have the footage, because I just can't make it up. It's a bit strange for me. So that's always been an interesting thing of, like, how do you build a story out of nothing? And I wouldn't really know how to start or even begin to get into that kind of job role. So for me, I think a really interesting person to have on the show would be like would be Daisy Cullum. She is a screenwriter for loads of different TV programs in the UK. So she's done like Humans, Grantchester, Death in Paradise. Wow. She's even done a few like soaps as well, like EastEnders and Casualty stuff. So she's got like a really broad range of creativity. I think it'd be awesome to hear from her.
Okay, cool. I'll see what I can do, see if we can get her on the podcast. Laura, thank you so much for your time today. I've loved speaking to you, and I'm really grateful I can speak to you all the time as well.
Me too. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review on Apple Podcasts, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. And also stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases. This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray and James Haberson, and to Mary Continenza for designing the beautiful artwork.